Welcome to this, the fourth in our series of podcasts for the Spectator's Economic Innovator of the Year Awards, sponsored by the private bank Julius Baer. We've been going around the regions of the United Kingdom, and today we come to Scotland and Northern Ireland. And I'm joined, as ever, by a guest panel of distinguished judges. So first of all, I'm going to introduce them and ask them to talk a little bit about themselves, and then we'll go on to talk about the finalists and how this awards process comes to its conclusion in a few weeks' time. So I'm very pleased to welcome back as guest judges this year Irene McAleese, whose company C-Sense, which makes smart bike lights which collect data from cyclists and put it to good use. She is from Northern Ireland, and she, having been a winner in 2018, has been with us as a judge last year and this year. Secondly, Ian Ritchie, chairman of Turn PLC, but actually a veteran of some 40 tech ventures in Scotland and elsewhere, and one of the most experienced tech investors in the Scottish business world. And representing Julius Baer, we have Gordon Scott, who's a regional team head, speaking to us today from Julius Baer's Edinburgh office. So let me invite the judges, first of all, to tell us a little bit more about themselves, but also I'm interested to hear this year, because everything is disturbed and disrupted by the pandemic, how that has affected their own business life and what they see of business around them. Irene, over to you first.
Thanks, Martin. And it's a pleasure to be back again this year and hopefully lend my experience as a startup and entrepreneur to the judging panel. So C-Sense is a cycling technology and data company. We are based in Northern Ireland. We're known for our bike lights, you're correct, but we're actually expanding the business now to integrate that technology into bicycle share schemes and e-cargo bike share schemes. So no bike light required, but still all the amazing sensor data that C-Sense can collect and transmit data straight from the bike to the cloud. So it's a new stage of the business that we're entering into, bike lights and also GPS sort of tracking and monitoring for bike share schemes, and actually there's a consumer product off the back of that. So some really interesting growth for C-Sense over this past year in developing that technology. Yeah, it's been an interesting year for cycling with COVID-19. Many cities around the world have the experience, the shock, and you know, people having struggles with being able to travel around the city while maintaining social distancing. The tube, for instance, in London is sort of operating at less than 20% capacity. So cities are needing to enable people to travel, and we've actually seen a really big boom in cycling in response to that. So people getting on their bikes who wouldn't normally cycle. And so this has led to sort of, you know, rise across the board for the cycling industry for product sales, but also interestingly for data as cities try to understand how they can accommodate cycling as part of their multimodal mix. So yeah, interesting times, challenging times, but interesting times. And I guess there's the silver lining for us is that cities are really starting to see the value for cycling as a resilient form of transport.
Thank you. Ian, do you find your tech community looking beyond the pandemic or somewhat traumatised and frozen by it?
Not so much frozen. I think we're all just trying to get through it. But the tech community is not as hard hit. You know, I mean, if you're trying to run a restaurant business or an airline business or any kind of hospitality business, it's hopeless at the moment. It really is. You've no idea when you're going to get closed down tomorrow. Tech companies, by and large, are fairly immune to that. And in the companies I'm involved in, actually, most of them are carrying on fine. They're all managing to maintain their revenue. They're getting new sales. It's obviously more difficult to get new sales when you can't physically meet with people. But it seems that the world has gone online and we're beginning to move. I mean, I think for a while, you know, for a couple of months, it was a bit of a status. But I think people are now realizing, hey, we've got to get on with life. You know, we've just got to move. And so if you need a new, you know, application or whatever one of the companies provides, then you've just got to get on with it and do it. So we're getting through it. There are other industries that are much, much worse affected than us. And certainly in my sector, I mean, I'm involved with about, what, 8 companies in various ways. Very few of them have used much in the way of the furlough provision. Most of us have kept our staff busy, working from home. But, you know, in this world we're living in today, and particularly the high-tech world, it's really not too difficult for people to work from home. And I think we've discovered, I think we've all discovered, that productivity doesn't drop. In fact, it rises. You know, being in an office, you can often, a lot of distractions, you know, people are coming back and forward, you know, there's all sorts of chit chat and, you know, water cooler stuff and, you know, and it's nice, but actually it does disrupt your thinking process. And so people working at home, they don't have a 2-hour commute. They don't have a lot of distractions, perhaps. A bit more difficult if you've got a 3-year-old. But by and large, you know, a lot of people find that they can just get on with it. So we haven't really found that productivity has gone amiss. Well, some things hit you. One of my companies had a subcontractor in Belarus, which has just gone pop. You know, the chief executive's been arrested and beaten up. So, you know, we've had to move our supplier to, I think, Romania or somewhere. But, you know, you just never know what's going to happen next. And I suppose that's one lesson we were all learning this year. You never know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, it's true. And I've now spoken to all the finalists for this year, but I've also, during lockdown, I happened to speak to several of our previous winners from last year. And the year before, I wanted to know how they were getting on. And what struck me across the board was adaptability, ingenuity. I mean, there was one, I think, in the logistics sector who said, well, initially we felt sort of poleaxed by this. It was such a shock. But actually, within a very short time, he said, we got our feet back under the desk. We adjusted to working from home. We did what we needed to do. We can see growth ahead. We're looking to next year. So optimism everywhere is what I've found, and I think it's been one of the things that's kept me cheerful through this period, is talking to entrepreneurs. Anyway, Gordon Scott, I can see you're back in your office there in Edinburgh. You're not working from home anymore. How do you see the business scene?
I would echo much of what Ian has seen and said there. From our perspective within Julius Baer, we were mobilised and able to work very effectively with full connectivity to full global markets and the full capability of the business pretty much from the start of lockdown. So I would hope that our clients have continued to benefit from the services that we have provided. That's been a busy time because global markets, as you'll know, as a market observer, have not moved uniformly up or down. So stock selection, geographical allocations have all been important. So being able to remain connected and alive to opportunity and to risk for clients has been huge. And to your point there, Martin, what keeps us all cheerful is the optimism, the attitudes and the creativity of the clients that we look after. From looking after their staff through to the creativity, the pivot and what happens next, how do I continue to grow from strength to strength? It's been really, really kind of reaffirming to watch and kind of covered within the entries that we've just spoken to today, to be honest.
Yeah, I know, we heard really upbeat presentations. We started with Float. Float is an app for small businesses of, say, between 5 and 100 employees. And it's a device and a piece of accounting kit which helps companies to do their cash flows much more accurately and in a strong graphic design kind of a way. And it's an add-on to the kind of accounting apps that people use, like QuickBooks and so on. We heard from Jennifer Given all about it. It is a fast expanding business. It has been giving free trials for business owners and anyone needing to do their cash flows urgently during the pandemic. They talk to their customers. I was pleased to hear that. It's not just an app. It's not just a piece of tech. It's a talking business as well. Ian, across your many businesses, could you see this as a useful tool?
Well, yes. In fact, one of my businesses does use it. I've been doing startup companies for 30 years. And I remember early on, I visited a company in Philadelphia and he had on his wall a framed notice which said, happiness is a positive cash flow. And that stuck with me ever since. And when I chair boards and when we get to the finance section, I always want a cash flow. I mean, balance sheets are, you know, I've no idea what they do. but cash flows are really, really important. And I always insist that every company I'm involved in has a cash flow forecast for the next 6 months. Because if you're going to, you know, a company, when it runs out of cash, it's dead. So it's as simple as that. So cash flow is absolutely vital. Some people do it better than others. I mean, it's very easy to be prudent in your cash flow and assume that everybody's going to pay late and you're going to have to pay everybody early and so forth. And that's no help either. So I think that the more tools you can have to accurately predict your cash flow, the better it is. And I can see there's a huge market for this app.
Gordon or Irene, any comment? Gordon probably wants to defend balance sheets. He's a banker.
Not at all. Surprisingly, I think we've seen so many businesses make no decisions or make poor decisions based on lack of information around about cash flow. And as Ian says, if cash flow runs out, the business is dead, that's for sure. So what I liked about the presentation that Jennifer gave was kind of capturing the moment. We need to give something to get something here. So they rolled out to potential users by free trials. They went to accountants. They supported, as you said, with kind of face-to-face voice support alongside the software so that people could really start to think through a very worrying time for small businesses. What if lockdown lasts till September, until December? What if this happens? Can I afford to keep all the staff on? And those were absolutely the decisions that most business owners, employers were trying to wrestle with over the early months of that period. And I'm pleased to hear from Jennifer that turned into sticky clients. I thought it was a courageous strategy and one which helped them capitalise on the uncertainty that existed.
Irene, is this a tool that would be useful in your business?
Possibly, yes. You know, scenario planning was definitely very relevant for us and many other businesses when COVID first hit. We were trying to talk to, you know, our board about possible scenarios, using cash flow to map that out, and it involved a lot of spreadsheets and a lot of time. So if there was something to help with that, I guess the challenge would be how much time does it take to set it up and to maintain it? Is something we would probably want to understand. But yeah, on the face of it, does seem very useful.
Great. Okay, well, let's move on. So the next one that we talk to is Locate a Locum. This is the Northern Ireland representative in our finance, a Belfast-based business. We heard from Jonathan Clark, who himself was a pharmacist by training. And this is a business which fills in shifts, essentially, in the pharmacy and healthcare sectors. It does so by direct contact between qualified people looking for shift work and employers who need to fill the shifts, and often need to fill them urgently and in a regulatory sense, that you can't open a pharmacy shop unless you've got a pharmacist on the premises and so on. In a care home setting, you have to have qualified staff on shift at all times and so on, and it cuts out the agencies and a whole layer of cost, so it can call itself the Uber or the Airbnb of pharmacy and of a wider potential healthcare market. So it's a problem-solving app. It's got a number of features to it, and it was very well presented to us by Jonathan. Irene, what occurred to you about this one?
So, I mean, this is quite an interesting one. I think it is. There is quite a good disruption in the industry. I don't think there was anything that's currently doing this sort of end-to-end process, because he mentioned it was about the matching process, but then all the way through to potentially looking at the payroll part. So there's a stickiness there to the payrolls as well once businesses get embedded in that. I mean, it's interesting how they really have been able to sort of cut out that recruitment agent, which really was, I guess, for employers presenting a significant cost, you know, for the total, you know, hourly wage of that person. So this could really help these care homes, pharmacies, etc., operate more efficiently. And we would hope then that those costs get passed back to the consumer. So really interesting business.
Gordon?
I think Jonathan and his team's description of healthcare now as the latest in the gig economy type approach, that flexibility that we want as a society now to choose when we work, how we work. But what I found really interesting there is that while they are supporting the flexibility of that workforce, the use of their tools to embed themselves into the entire operations of their clients makes them pretty hard to shift themselves. So they are making themselves a very sticky business model out of supporting flexibility and fluidity for their consumers.
Ian, over to you.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that impressed me most, the fact that they understood the pharmacy market and they were providing much more than just a locum. They were providing the transportation, the expenses, the all that type of thing. That was fantastic. And now they're moving on to care homes. And I think they made a very wise move of steering clear of the NHS. I mean, I've been involved in a number of businesses that have tried to break into the NHS, and selling to the NHS in the UK is a nightmare. And so the pharmacy business is much more open to them, and they've managed to make great headway with that. And I'm sure they will also make good headway with the care home industry, which is, there's a large amount of private sector in there as well, and they're looking for solutions. So, very impressive.
Yeah. Now, I think you've hit a key point there, in that we can admire this kind of business, but at the same time, we can worry about the NHS if entrepreneurs find it too impenetrable that they don't really want to, point their efforts at the NHS. They prefer to work in the private sector. That's a concern for another day. But that really is a problem-solving business. Our last of the four competitors today, back in the, social purpose space, as it were, it's called One Year No Beer. And we heard from Rory Fairburn, the founder, that he was an oil broker in the city, in a milieu where people drink a lot. And when he told his boss that he thought experimentally, although he didn't feel he had a drink problem, he was going to give up drinking and for a while and see what it felt like, his boss said, well, that's commercial suicide. But he did it anyway. He felt much better. He told his friends how good this was. He began to develop a kind of network of people talking about that. And then he realized there was a business opportunity in it to help people to break the habit or even addiction of alcohol, to feel much better and so on. So he now has this business with 100,000 members in 90 countries who are people who are trying to address their drinking habit and reduce it, and they can pay for a 1 month, a 90-day, a whole year program of communication, videos, email traffic, blogs and so on that help them to do that. He described himself, everybody today described themselves as the something else of their sector. In this case, it was the Weight Watchers of alcohol, was his catchy phrase. And so I put it to him, do you think your business is vulnerable to being accused of being sort of exploitative or something like that? And he explained, no, there are a whole lot of ventures now addressing well-being of all kinds across a whole spectrum of human activities and frailties and so on, and that they are very helpful in improving people's lifestyles, and it's a recognised business sector. So it was a very passionate presentation. We enjoyed hearing it. Irene, what did you think about it?
I think it's very fascinating it's impressive the growth that they've had. I think, year on year, 300% growth, I think was mentioned, and that they've got into, 70,000 plus members across 90 countries over just the last few years. So that's amazing traction. And it seems to be impressive as well that they've been able to partner with a university to validate that there is, the success rate, that they're having is quite high, that the behavior change program seems to be working. So that's great that they have that. So it's very interesting to hear his philosophy as well, I think, around behavior change and not blaming the individual about the problem and just taking a different broader coaching perspective. So really interesting philosophy and very impressive traction. So yeah, fascinating.
Ian?
Well, I'm staggered, I have to say. I really am. They've managed to get themselves 70,000 members in 90 countries.
think he said 100,000 by now.
Sorry? It's 100,000 by now. Goodness me. And maybe, you know, maybe COVID has contributed to this, and that certainly I'm drinking more, sitting and watching TV in the evening. And, you know, you do wonder about that type of situation. And obviously they made a great progress in the alcohol market, but there's also other markets. There's people with dietary problems, there's people with porn addiction, there's all sorts of issues that they could turn their themselves to, and I'm sure they can. The interesting thing for me, being a techie, is that they're planning to launch an app which supports a lot of their activities, and it will be fascinating to see how that goes. It's not always easy to move from one type of delivery to another type of delivery. But then they have a heck of a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge of their customers, and they know what people react to and so forth. So if anybody's going to win with an app, it will be these guys, I guess. I mean, 3.5 million turnover, crikey. That's quite extraordinary.
Gordon?
The thing is that aspect that Irene talked about, removing the problem perception, to open it up to people that think, well, am I maybe just not living as healthily as I should? What can I do about it? So it's tapping into that lifestyle health kind of perception that's perhaps been accelerated through the COVID crisis. But really, inventively, from their perspective, rather than just saying, that's it, we can have a subscription for 365 days and then walk away, they have built that community about it. And Rory and his team are now really thinking, so if we're driving healthier lifestyles, then we want a slice of Peloton. We want a slice of the healthy eating brands. We want a slice of... So as they're shaping, changing, adapting consumer behaviours, they're thinking about the extended life cycle of their own business model and how that kind of moves forward. So, yeah, really energetic, passionate presentation, and I can see a lot of traction, a lot of mileage in it for them.
Yeah, they're very interesting. And an example of the way Peloton is an interesting name to throw in this conversation, because it's all about how people don't just want a product, a solution. It might be a medication in the case of an addiction, but what they want is a community. They want a big online group of people they can share their issues with, and so on. And this is a way of developing that idea in the lifestyle and wellness area. We're going on now amongst the judges of this region and the other regions to decide who our overall winner is going to be. We're also going to pick a winner in the category of social impact. That's a separate judging process, and all of this will come to a glorious conclusion in November with what sadly this year has to be a virtual event, but it'll be a glittering one nevertheless, where we announce the award. So we say thank you very much, first of all, to our finalists, second to my judging panel, Irene, Ian and Gordon, and thank you to all the listeners who've tuned in for these podcasts. Stay with us for the conclusion of the awards, as I say, in November. Thank you very much indeed, and goodbye. Thank you.